So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Why does exercise keep us happy, healthy, and even smart? It's a great battle for all of us against depression, anxiety, and suicidality in the culture. So why can exercise help change that narrative? We're also going to discuss, what does loyalty and friendship look like, and how do you navigate those friendships when sometimes we feel like our boundaries are being violated? We'll also dive into the topic of one woman's story where she says this, and it's important that we have a perspective that's thoughtful toward others. I'm 35, I'm single, and I'm childless. How can the church respond? And what perspective can we have as women when we face childlessness at a time when we wish that was a phase in life that we ourselves were in? You're listening to Training with Timory. Joining me now is the Catholic psychologist, Dr. Gregory Bataro. We're going to dive into a very important topic. There have been trends of many people who turn to yoga, Buddhism as a form of exercise, and even as a form of meditation and stress relief. But one of the challenges found is that many people are supplementing their Catholic faith with other forms of spirituality. Now, the challenge arises even further where there's this trend in the culture where it starts with dabbling, I guess you could say, in Buddhism on the side. And then in reality, we're seeing many people who end up stop going to church. They leave their faith and at times leave their family. In fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, telling her that I was going to discuss this. And she said, you know, one of my closest friends, 30 years, came to me recently and told me that she now is going to have an open marriage and asked if me and my husband wanted to join. So this was someone who was Catholic. We raised our children together, went to church together, were involved in the church. My question was, what happened? And she said, well, actually, she said, started getting into Buddhism and yoga and stopped going to church, became an atheist, and now this is where it led to. So joining me now is Catholic psychologist Dr. Gregory Bataro from CatholicPsych.com. I want to ask Dr. Bataro, what are people missing in the rich spiritual heritage of our Catholic faith that they're filling a gap, essentially, with Buddhism?
Well, it's a good question. I think to clarify the question first, there's nothing missing in our rich spiritual faith in our tradition. But what people are not getting, what's not necessarily being taught, what's not being emphasized, what's not being clarified and given to people who are looking is some very deep human characteristics that resonate with our soul, such as compassion and connection and a certain kind of seeking of calm and happiness, really, peace, that people are striving for, missing, longing for in their life. And that's not necessarily what some of the teachers of the faith now are leading with. And so that's what people are sort of longing for and looking for, and where I think they think they're finding that in other places.
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Bataro, because in reality, it kind of goes to this body-soul division that a lot of people have created. And at times, there's been just criticism where some people allow their faith to be turned into a thing they just do on Sundays, or even just these really intense moral precepts. And as some people say, they have Catholic guilt. And that's the challenge, is that they're missing the robust tradition of our Catholic faith that is full of the meditation, the virtue ethics, the understandings of kindness, gentleness, generosity, that are all very richly rooted in our Catholic tradition, but have kind of been lost in the teaching along the way. And so it's fascinating to see that many people turn, for example, to yoga as a form of exercise, right? They love the exercise. It helps them sweat, helps them get into shape, helps them breathe, helps them stretch, alleviate back pain. But isn't it fascinating? And this is what we do as a culture. The things that we love, the things that help us, we tend to suddenly make our new God, and we worship those things. And that's part of the challenge, is a lot of people say, what happened? She just started doing yoga. How did it go this far? And there's been a lot of conversation we've had where we've discussed some of the challenges and problems with yoga, why they're, for example, on an examination of conscience, which we'll link today's show. But the idea more so of what we're discussing now, Dr. Pataro, is the idea of what's missing. So where is that body-soul disconnect, do you think, happening for a lot of Catholics where they're missing what the church is offering?
Absolutely. And I think that's the richness of our Catholic faith. Offers that integration, that body-soul connection. And if we really do look for it within the context of our faith, we will find it. And there's also an acceptance of and allowance for the science of our bodies, the science of our psychology, understanding the way our brains work, the way our minds work, and the way our bodies work. And so if we have that as a foundation, our faith is a foundation, and then we go exploring, looking for things that it will explain the way our minds work and other things like that, we will come up with an answer that brings this integration together. And we'll find that there are commonalities, of course. Exercise is good for the body. People who are doing yoga are exercising. There's goodness in this, in the way that they're moving their body and things like that. But that there is a dangerous spirituality behind yoga that, you know, like you said, when people start to feel good about something, they want to go all in on it. And so, you know, I see this with different exercise programs like CrossFit, you know, whatever. People get really excited about it. But if you're in a place that has a spirituality behind it, it can be dangerous. You're talking to the leader, the teacher, and it's like, well, I want to stay after class. I want to learn more. And then that person happens to practice Buddhism and yoga at a spiritual level. Well, that's certainly going to become very problematic. So you know, this is why we need to put ourselves...
Just real quick, it brings to mind the importance of influencers, of what we're being influenced by, because I like that point you just touched on, and I want to drill down on it for a moment. When we like something, whether it's a speech or it's a fitness class, we want to talk to the people who gave that to us, who influenced us, helped make our bodies feel better. And I think that's pretty significant to understand. And again, you made the distinction, whether it's CrossFit or yoga, but also recognizing, and again, we'll post a link to this in the show notes, the radical difference between yoga and CrossFit is that yoga does have a form of spirituality that is what yoga is, even if people don't realize that's part of what they're doing when they think they're just going to do a fitness class.
Yeah, and if we don't understand the underpinnings and the background and the foundation on which we're practicing these things, it can get really messy, because obviously moving your body in a certain position can never be intrinsically evil, but doing it with the language and the words and the labels and the dimensions of the music, the spiritual, you know, dimension that's there, you know, being led in a certain direction with a certain purpose, that can become really problematic. And so it's really important we educate ourselves in what these distinctions are.
And I'll admit, you know, I just didn't get it. I grew up in the fitness and the dance world. I'm a Pilates trainer. Good Lord, the next person who says, oh, you teach yoga, right? I like what cringe, because Pilates is like very scientifically based in science and kinesiology and the body and the spine, and totally different, has no faith dimension whatsoever. But I remember, you know, yoga was something that I was exposed to quite a bit in the dancer world, from dancing with Akirov in Washington, D.C., to other various companies and programs. And it was always interesting to me the fact that years later, I came to understand, yes, moving your body and doing stretches and various exercises, breathing, even doing, you know, it in the heat, as some people love their hot yoga. There's nothing wrong with fitness, but the problem is that, again, that spiritual dimension that's laid over, and I explain why that's a problem. And I'll give a brief summary and we'll link to that in the show notes. It's because yoga is the Buddhist form, essentially, of worship. And that's why people get so upset saying, well, that pose is problematic, or those words. So it's understanding the distinction. You can stretch all you want. You can get healthy and exercise. And we'll link again to that in the show notes. But I want to touch on something, and I think it's really important, Dr. Pataro, and you see this, I imagine, with a lot of your clients. As a Catholic psychologist, it's easy, I'm sure, to see how our faith basically becomes fragmented, compartmentalized, Catholicism essentially. Whereas Patrick, my producer here, just commented, it's almost as if faith just becomes a hobby to us, and it's not the number one hobby. It becomes the secondary hobby or the third hobby, rather than it being all-encompassing.
Yeah, 100%. That's a really big problem. That's why I work a lot on integration. And somebody just asked me, like, just to give a concise definition of what integration means. And it's understanding that God made us biopsychosocial spiritual, meaning we have these four general categories of the way that we operate and function in the world. And our body, mind, and spirit, and especially in our relationships, are all areas of seeking excellence and ways that we can be healthy or not healthy. And we need to bring all of those pieces together in our pursuits, in our decisions, in the way we set ourselves up for success. And that's how to actually be healthy. So if we're just emphasizing our body and we're leaving our spirituality out of it, we're not going to actually be healthy. And if we're just emphasizing our spirituality and we're ignoring our bodies, we're not going to be healthy. And there's an important way to bring all of these pieces together and see all of them as who we actually are, because we are body and spirit together, that will be our path to actual happiness and peace.
So what is that integration? How do we find that? And how is that something, for example, that you're trying to help people understand to bridge that gap from the struggle with mental health, our Catholicism, and, you know, so many people who are dabbling in other forms of spirituality because they think that there's something that they're missing in their Catholic faith. They want more, but they don't know that it's there.
Well, you know, there can't be a contradiction between those four areas. I think that's an important principle. They all derive from who God made us, and God is a God of truth, and truth is in unity. So it's one truth, capital T. So if there's something that's healthy in the body, you know, if it's going to line up with truth, it's got to be healthy for our soul, and vice versa. If it's healthy for our soul, it'll be healthy for our body. And that's why even like intermittent fasting now, everybody's all the rage. Where it's like, yeah, we've been talking about fasting for a long time, a lot longer than people doing intermittent fasting.
It turns out it's actually healthy. We did it a lot more as Catholics, and we've lightened up that over the last, you know, 60 years or so.
Exactly.
It's funny to see, you know, you turn to Judaism or you turn to even the Chaldean Catholics, they've kept more of the fasting. And I remember I was always amazed by one of my dear Chaldean friends when we were in college. She'd like be fasting like for a week practically and be like, what the heck are you doing? And she'd be joyful. She'd be happy. It would be no big deal. She'd just say no thank you to some food, and we could do it, and it was
absolutely
okay, and it was good for the soul and healthy for the body, as we've come to discover with this trend of intermittent fasting.
Absolutely. And that's why when I do something like, you know, when I was learning, I was working in a psychiatric hospital, and I learned about mindfulness as an accepted and normal intervention for most of the inpatient population, and then I started to think about, okay, well, why does this work? How does this work? If this is something that's actually good, how could this or should this integrate with our faith? You know, obviously, if it has a Buddhist background to it, like there's got to be parts of it that are not integrated with our faith and that are not part of what even makes it healthy. But is there some way to look at that and see how it can make us healthy and be healthy? And that's when I realized it's actually just a psychological manifestation of abandonment to divine providence. And then lo and behold, the spiritual principle of abandonment to divine providence actually makes us healthy. And when we do that psychologically, we become happier, we decrease depression, we decrease anxiety, and we learn that because we have a Father we can trust, we have nothing to worry about, we can follow Jesus's command to not be anxious about the things of our life, and we can be happy. So this is how we bring all these pieces together. This is what integration really looks like.
That's Dr. Gregory Bataro here on Trending with Timmer. You can find him at CatholicPsych.com. You can also find some of his workbooks, especially a recent book coming out on St. Joseph. Check out the bookstore there at CatholicPsych.com. We'll be back here on Trending, and we're going to discuss really the topic of 35 single and childless. What can we do as a church for women and men who are facing this? But what can you do if this is the state you're in? We'll also discuss how to navigate loyalty in friendship and why exercise makes us happy, healthy, and smart. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Ironically, today we decided to talk about exercise and how it's happy, healthy, and keeps you smart. But we just talked about yoga as well and the influence of Buddhism. I just want, as a side caveat for just a moment, perhaps you found yourself practicing yoga. You think, what's the big deal? It doesn't matter that much. Yoga is a form of Buddhist spirituality. It's basically their worship service. That's why it's on an examination of conscience. And I present that just so we know, so we understand. We understand that the chants, the words that I had no idea what those words meant, were words having to do with their form of worship in Buddhism. And also ideas that actually are contrary to our Catholic faith. And we'll present that in the show notes. I'll post a link to some of the podcasts that we've done on Buddhism and yoga because it's helpful to dive a little further. What I'm saying just barely scratches the surface. But I want to talk today, because it's very important, about exercise. Exercise is something, of course, near and dear to my heart. You may know I'm a Pilates trainer and fitness trainer as well, and I've danced, started taking ballet at the age of 3 years old, and I've taught ballet in professional settings, along with other forms of dance as well, and exercise is something that we take for granted. When we're used to it and we have a momentum and a rhythm of exercising, we're so used to it being a part of our lives that perhaps you notice when you don't exercise how crappy you really can feel. Maybe a little gloomy, perhaps unfocused. Yes, the flab, if the time is prolonged that you're not exercising. You're a little more aware when you're not as toned and agile as you're used to being. Exercise also can be one for many people where it's like hashtag goals, right? Not something that you necessarily have in your life and you really wish you had and you need to start making it happen. How do you make that happen? We'll talk about that. Solutions to put exercise in your life, because let's be real, it shouldn't just be, yes, Patrick, a New Year's resolution. It should be a part of our mind, body, soul care, because caring for our body does impact our mind and soul. And that's what's so important about integrating our faith and understanding that prayer is fundamental. Attending Mass, receiving Jesus Christ, going to the sacraments and receiving His graces are important. But God also, on a lower level, but yes, important, gave us a physical body and we're called to be good stewards of it. So let's break down some of the fascinating science and chemicals that occur when we exercise to really see and understand the benefit. And I'll give a little side story here. So when I was working with college students, I was working in student life, and it was interesting seeing how a lot of college students would struggle with depression, they'd struggle with anxiety, suicidality, they'd also struggle with doing too much too soon with a person they were dating. And often they'd end up running to the doctor to figure out what's wrong, fix me. What's the first thing the doctor would often say to a young, what should be otherwise healthy teenager or individual in their early 20s? And really the question that comes at most of us, but the expectation perhaps isn't as high, is, well, do you exercise? Are you eating right? Are you sleeping? And that question, do we exercise? Again, it becomes hashtag goals, or it becomes a challenge given the state in life and the transition we may be going through. I get that. Being a new mom, finding the balance of what exercise looks like now. So here's the reality. Why does the doctor always ask, what does your exercise look like? How often are you exercising? Why don't they emphasize more why we should work out more? Well, I'm going to tell you now. There are certain things that trigger in our bodies, and specifically our brains, that help us with everything from reducing pain, boosting mood, being more alert and focused, to improving cognitive function, repairing damaged nerve cells, helping us to be in this greater sense of having motivation and pleasure. It even prevents aging and brain loss volume. It's fascinating. So let's talk about why. Well, one of the things that's released when we exercise, and if you ever saw the movie Legally Blonde with Reese Witherspoon, you may recall when Brooke Shields is on trial, and there we know Reese Witherspoon's character is defending her. She said she's trying to defend why this woman didn't kill her husband. She didn't kill her husband, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie. And she says, well, she exercises all the time. And she says, exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy, and happy people just don't kill their husbands. It's one of the lines of the movie that's just hilarious, but it's true. Exercise helps keep us happy and from doing often crazy things. Although, yes, some people can over-exercise too, and that can be bad. But the vast majority of people, that's not the case. We need the motivation, and here's some of your motivation. So endorphins are basically brain receptors. They reduce the perception of pain. They help with positivity in terms of your bodily sensation. Did you know that endorphins can be even stronger than a medication known as morphine? Absolutely riveting. It's fascinating. So I actually, not to like toot my own horn at all, because it's by the grace of God and a lot of opportunity to offer up prayers, but I had an all-natural birth. And I remember when we were preparing for birth and everything, in the class, they talked about how you can actually trigger endorphins and other chemicals in your body by breathing and various things you do. And it's stronger than morphine. Stronger than morphine to help you through the pain. And taking that morphine isn't necessary. Now, of course, you wouldn't take morphine when you're going through labor. But the point is that endorphins help you so that you don't have to take morphine in other situations in life. Or where you need that quick fix and pill to help you through things. That's how powerful the endorphins are that we end up having in our bodies to reduce our perception of pain, have positive bodily sensations. We live in a culture that is highly medicated and over-medicated. Exercise is one of the solutions. You see, endorphin makes you feel good. Have you ever heard someone talk about that runner's high? Well, that runner's high is a sense of euphoria, feeling great. That's endorphins. And again, as Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde said, endorphins make you happy. And happy people just don't kill their husbands. Maybe that's a solution to marital difficulties. I jest. But maybe it could be part of the solution, right? But it also helps you with your sense of esteem. The endorphins themselves. Helps you with your well-being. Helps you to improve your memory, your mood, and is a fighter against brain disease. This is how powerful endorphins are that we experience from exercise. But then there's a chemical of serotonin. Now, serotonin is another chemical. It's like a little chemical cocktail that we give our brain for good juice of happiness, well-being, brain smarts. And serotonin boosts your mood as well. Serotonin boosts your mood. And actually, serotonin is one of the main things that is in antidepressants. Because serotonin is a mood booster. That's why someone comes in and says they're depressed, a doctor should not only ask, but encourage exercise as a first resort. You see, a lot of people struggle in getting off of the couch. Serotonin is one of those chemicals that helps you get off the couch. Are you struggling? Are you feeling down, depressed? Exercise. Force yourself to exercise. Force yourself to exercise. I'll say it again. Even if you've had the habit of exercise in the past, or you've never had the habit at all, it hurts when you start exercising. But as many people say, and a wise woman in my life has said many times before, no pain, no gain. This is a woman who's quite a bit older, in her 80s now, and she always emphasized no pain, no gain. She still exercises. She's still healthy. She's still fit. Why? Because she recognizes that the difficult things in life actually help us to gain all the more. And that's the case with exercise. You're listening to Trending with Timmer here on Relevant Radio. Why is exercise good? What's the chemical cocktail we receive in our brains? Well, we mentioned endorphins. We mentioned serotonin, the science behind them, and why it helps us. But norepinephrine is another one of the chemicals. You know, it's a chemical and hormone that makes us alert and focused. In fact, in a study out of the University of Illinois, from exercising just 20 minutes, it increased. Study shows that for an individual who has ADHD, 20 minutes of exercise actually helped to heighten scores and focus to increase cognitive control. A lot of people who experience ADD and ADHD have said that they have to get their exercise. If you know this about yourself, or maybe you didn't know this is an important piece to working through some of the challenges you might face in focusing, exercise helps with that alert and focus. It also, norepinephrine helps you to avoid distractions. Now, fascinating moment here, because I think it's a really important caveat that we add into this. A lot of these hormones and chemicals that I'm naming are also things that are released in our brain, giving that chemical cocktail when we engage in physical intimacy and when you look at porn. Why do I mention this? Because all of these chemicals I'm talking about are an incredible psychological boost, literally, in our brain. This is why porn is addictive. This is why sex can also be addictive. Because it's so powerful in terms of the chemical cocktail and the binding memories we're creating with other people. We're depressed, of course we want to look at porn. We're depressed, we're anxious, of course it helps calm us, engage in intimacy. This is what's so important for us to understand, that physical exertion helps with marital chastity. Physical exertion helps with being chaste, with sexual integrity prior to getting married. In fact, I've talked to a lot of my friends who are priests, and they talk about how important it is that they exercise. Why? Because that helps in keeping their mind, body, and soul focused and integrated. What is chastity? Chastity is faithfulness to your vocation. Well, believe it or not, exercise helps you to be faithful to your vocation. It's just one piece of it. So there's also BDNF. It's a brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Now, this is really important because here's what BDNF does in exercise. It preserves cognitive function in the sense that it protects the brain. It promotes and forms new connections between nerve cells. It even repairs damaged nerve cells and activates and is active in the memory. So BDNF, another thing that we experience from exercise, actually helps with cognitive function, nerve cells, nerve damage, and our memories. Isn't that fascinating? So then there's dopamine, that pleasure high that we get. Part of the reason why when we're hungry, you're reminded of all those different foods. You think, oh, that's good. Maybe your mouth begins to water. Well, that's a natural instinct God put into our bodies. Why? Because he wanted us to care for ourselves so that we don't die out. Dopamine is that reminder that we get that, remember that food? It tasted really good. You should have a little bit more. That's why even food itself can be addictive, because we like the dopamine hit. There's such a thing as breakup eating, Ben and Jerry ice cream, depression eating, because it makes us feel good. But so does exercise. Maybe that's a solution to weight issues. Just exercise. A little more exercise, especially if you're someone who has it. And Grant, a lot of the old adages, if you're trying to lose weight, for most people, it's 80% diet, 20% exercise. But for some people who don't exercise at all, it can be more than that. So dopamine is that natural mood lifter. It's a natural antidepressant. It helps to give you pleasure, motivation, and reward. Without dopamine, you actually lack motivation to put effort into things. This is why exercise, sometimes you feel like you can, after that workout, do a whole lot more still. You can function, have a higher capacity to achieve and a desire to achieve. You see, exercise also prevents aging, the loss of brain volume, and exercise is an anti-inflammatory. This is how helpful exercise can be. From the dopamine, from the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, to the endorphins, again, as was said by Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde, exercise makes you happy. Why? Because we get endorphins, right? Endorphins make you happy, and happy people just don't kill their husbands. I say that as a joke, but I think it's important to remember as well. We need exercise in our lives. It is so important that we are incorporating that. That could be a 30-minute walk. That could be two 15-minute, you know, things split in half, 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening. It could be literally you get up and start doing jumping jacks at your desk. I don't know what it is for you. That's sometimes what I have to do because that's the only way I'm going to get exercise in. Like, okay, ready? Let's go. 30 air squats, whatever it is. And somebody say, oh, Timory, but you're a fitness trainer. No, anyone can do air squats. Anyone can do burpees. Trust me, I hate burpees too. I hate burpees. At least right now I hate burpees because it's like miserable and like postpartum land. And it's like painful to get them in. So what can we do? Well, before we talk about what solutions we can incorporate in order to get more exercise, because we love our solutions here, what gets in the way of exercising? This is a great question. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. And coming up, we're going to be discussing topic of 35, single and childless. How can the church help? And what can you do if this is your state to be happier, to find peace and joy? I'll be back here on Trending. We're going to discuss what we can do in terms of exercise, finding solutions, and furthermore, we'll discuss why it's such a challenge to exercise.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We just dove into all the scientific reasons for exercising with all the chemicals and hormones that are released. Exercise can help to produce endorphins, which are so strong. They're like morphine and can even be more effective than morphine. So we talk about that and more. If you didn't catch it, head over to relevantradio.com/trending where you can subscribe to the show and share this episode. But I want to talk about some of the solutions and some of the challenges in exercising. One, in terms of challenges, we fail to make time. There's always an excuse for the state of life that we're in. Too many kids, too little time, too much work, too many new projects, too many commitments, social life. The bottom line is this. If you don't make time, you will never exercise. And if you don't make it a habit, you will never exercise. I'm in that phase in life where it's a different phase. I'm learning how exercise looks in this current phase in life. Hey, I've got a baby. Baby works as a great weight, by the way. Baby loves to go outside on the walk. You know, you find transitions, you find things to make it work. It might even be that you get up in the morning and you do 5 minutes, only 5 minutes. And then maybe you go for a little walk outside in the middle of your work day. And then maybe you just do 5 more minutes later on. Maybe that's all you can do right now. But the goal is to have the habit of exercise. And you may be a person who needs to do a class. You may be a gym rat that's self-motivated. You may be a person that hates CrossFit but loves running. Or who running is not for me, by the way, but loves Pilates. And also, everyone has different things that work better for their bodies as well. In terms of what complements their body, given the state and age and life that they're in. Hence, running usually tends to go by the wayside. As the years go on, your joints need a little more love and care. So all of these things are important to remember. Don't do exercise that you don't like. But you've got to find exercise that you're willing to do. That's a challenge. And sometimes, I know for me, I like something organized usually. It's a matter of either writing out the exercises I want to accomplish myself or just pulling up a video and going, I have to finish this 10-minute video. I have to stay at the gym for an hour. Whatever it is, setting it and sticking to it. And a tip in terms of making this happen as a solution, yes, YouTube is fantastic, Patrick, for exercise videos. From CrossFit to you name it, P90X, you can find anything. You want to work your butt, you want to work your abs, you want to work your shoulder, it is there. So here's one thing that I did. So when I was in college, I had all those excuses. I was taking graduate level courses as an undergrad student. I was overwhelmed with papers and reading. I don't know how I read as much as I read. Good Lord. I mean, everything else had to like come by the wayside just to get through my courses. And exercise was something that was one of those things that was easy to throw out of the way. But the reality is I knew if I exercised, I would be more productive. The other thing I knew is if I took Sunday off, I'd also be more productive. God does duplicate time, and boy, he did. But exercise is one of those things. Now, sometimes that meant strapping myself like in a rat in a hamster, a hamster in a hamster cage, to an elliptical or a bike and riding while I read, or talking on the phone. That was my social time. Whatever it was, you know, you kind of have to find multitasking. But here's what I did that helped. I took 30 or 31 little sticky tabs, and I'd put them on a wall or somewhere where I'd see them every day. And I'd have 1 through 31, depending on the month. And if I exercised on that day, I'd take it and stick it in a pile. And at the end of the month, I'd count how many days I exercised. And I'd write it down next to it. And the next month, I needed to do exercise more. And I'd keep holding myself accountable. So if I saw in a prominent place in my home, all those sticky tabs there, and I saw, wow, I have not exercised like at all so far this month, or not much at all. It's a motivation. It's a goal. It sets a task before you to get up and go, because it's easy to put working out on your to-do list each day. And it's easy to go, oh, well, I didn't accomplish that. But it's hard when you see in front of you, I didn't exercise for 20 days this week, and it's day 21. Or I didn't exercise for 15 days this week, and it's day 30. So I exercised half of the days this week. That's better than last month. So it's a really easy way to help motivate yourself, to keep yourself accountable, and maybe you live with other people, to have it so that they can see as well. Maybe your spouse can say, hey, looks like you need to get some exercise in. You've not been doing it. I know it's helpful. You've been a little down lately. You're having trouble focusing. This is a conversation that actually my husband and I have all the time. We yo-yo. Maybe one person isn't making it to the gym this week. Maybe the other person isn't getting their workout in. They're struggling with focus. Being aware that that's a fundamental part of how we achieve what we achieve, how we're happy, is really important. So those are some tips for exercise. Everything from YouTube to sticky tabs to getting over your excuses. Remember, we are Catholic, and we believe in change and transformation by the grace of God. And you can make changes in your life. That's what being Catholic is all about, transformation. And exercise is one of those moments to remember we are a body and a soul. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. A couple years ago, I read this article that stood out to me so much. I was thinking about it again today. And it was at lovewhatmatters.com. And it was titled, My Secret Grief, Over 35, Single and Childless. Maybe you yourself find yourself in a similar situation. I know many men and women who've discovered that they're at a state in life where they never thought they would still be single, perhaps never thought they wouldn't have children. You're trying to reconcile all of this. For women in particular, they find that this is a grieving, a thing that they grieve alone. Their desire for a baby is profound. One woman commented, she said, listen, I didn't burn my bra. I tried to date. I wanted to get married. And she said, I was not picky. But things just didn't work out. I never met anyone. And in fact, I have a lot of friends who, it's a prayer. There aren't a lot of moments where I have this, but I pray, Lord, please, in this situation, like, why? And can you help? This is a challenge of our culture that for some reason, people who have been willing, who have been single, pringle, ready to mingle, totally willing, are still searching. And it does become a phase of mourning. And in fact, many friends and even many family members can be extremely insensitive to this state in life. Perhaps you found yourself or should have compassion as they watch friends and family. They desire to have that family, and at times they struggle with jealousy and are experiencing a sense of pain. Perhaps a sense of withdrawal because they don't have that and they're in a different state in life and feel like they can't mingle with those people who are in that state. It can lead to a sense of anxiety sometimes, even with the singleness, especially for women. Women who find they thought that they would have had someone they were living with, had someone who was caring for them. One of the frustrations I often hear is the inconsideration of their married friends and family members and even parents who will just take for granted that the single person can just go along and not be considered as an individual as well, who has thoughts and feelings and might even have an opinion for what's done for Christmas, where people go. A lot of people will even inconsiderately look at this person and say, "Huh, you're childless, it must be nice." I've actually heard that before, and I'm horrified, jaw dropped when I hear this, but it's something that people say often. Or maybe it's that over-harassment of every time you see your single friend, you say, "Dating anyone? Thinking about marriage?" It's almost as if you're always reducing that person to their dating status, and maybe you yourself have felt this way. A couple years ago, back in 2018, there was a study done that showed that 18% of all people age 40 to 44 were childless. So 1 in 5 people who were in their early 40s were childless. And with that, half of them wanted to be parents. You know, see, this is the challenge. There's a sense of feeling lost motherhood, last idea of a companion, potentially. So the question is, where do we go from here? Well, I think that first, it's important to validate the sorrow and acknowledge that what you want is something that is good. And that's okay. And that's beautiful to desire it. But like anyone, we can't allow our dreams, our desires, to destroy us along the way to achieving them. Because sometimes our dreams and our desires aren't quite what we end up thinking they will be when we try to work our way there or even achieve them. That God does have a plan, as hard as that is, that what you want is good, but that what you're seeking is also something that you can't allow to destroy. You have a dear friend and her child has severe autism. And she's searching for cures and solutions, trying to make things better. And this great mom has done a lot of work in helping her son be more better, more social. But at the end of the day, it can't be the only thing that drives her, the idea of healing the autism. There has to be a sense of peace and love for the state and life she is in and the person she has before her. And I use that as an example because it's important that we're driven, but we're not driven mad by what we're seeking. I'll say that again. It's important that we're driven, but that we're not driven mad or don't become obsessive over what we're seeking. So again, validate and acknowledge what you're seeking is good, and there can be a sense of sorrow and even grief and mourning if you found that you've not reached that. But also, I think an important part, and St. John Paul II has discussed this, especially for women in particular, that often, as Carol Vutila in his work, Love and Responsibility, prior to being Pope, GP2 spoke to the topic of spiritual motherhood and how, in fact, women can actually even desire a baby more than they desire a husband at times. We've seen this in the culture today, where in fact, many women are hooking up because they just want to get a baby out of the man. Or they're turning to third-party reproductive services and because they want that technology to help them have a kid. The desire to have a child is beautiful. It's a good thing. And so John Paul II, in his work Love and Responsibility, prior to becoming Pope, discusses spiritual motherhood and biological motherhood and how both are good and how the potency for biological motherhood written into every single female body is actually a representation as well of spiritual motherhood too. And this is very important, that you're practicing your spiritual maternity in life. I remember some years ago when I was about 18, 19, I was working on various projects and I was trying to discern what to do next in terms of work. And a priest said to me, he's like, "Well, Timory, where are your children?" And I go, "Father, I don't have any children." He said, "Timory, go where your children are." "I don't have any children, Father. I don't know what you're talking about." And he was trying to emphasize and he explained, where are you able to practice that spiritual motherhood? Where are you able to give of yourself? That is the challenge I think many women face in this crisis of wanting to be mothers and finding that they are not in a place where they have biological children. How can we practice our spiritual motherhood? This is a challenge and task that all of us have as women, that we are always practicing our spiritual maternity. The various projects, perhaps as a doctor, perhaps in volunteering, perhaps whatever it is for you, it can be different for each woman and the many gifts and talents and capacity for love that God has given us. The idea is to volunteer and give of yourself and to go where your spiritual children are. But another question we have to answer is, what can we do as a church for those incredible human beings who, like the example I gave, they're over 35, single and childless, how can we help? I think that first we have to be sensitive to this topic and welcome them into our families. Make them a part of the family. Be able to talk about ideas and not just your kids. And be able to not say, hey, it must be nice to be childless. Or always expect them to just go along and not necessarily have an opinion as well. I know this is a cry of many people who find that maybe there's an insensitivity to planning various events for Christmas and holidays and birthdays without also including the opinion of your single children and family members. Listen, be aware, and be sensitive to the state in life and the challenges that they face as a single in the culture. And always be willing to introduce and make connections, not just for the sake of dating, but for friendships. And please, please, unless they tell you they don't mind, don't ask them every single time you see them if they're dating anyone. Because it often touches on a wound that is there. And Patrick, you commented just a moment ago, Patrick's here. He said it's almost like reducing someone to their sexuality. When we talk about homosexuality, so many people reduce someone to being gay. Gay is a lifestyle. It's not an identity. Well, singleness is not an identity. And it's so important that we recognize that and not reduce people to that. But also remember, as the church, we are all part of the body of Christ. We all have gifts. We all have talents. We all have compassion, complementarity to give to one another, to make up the great body of Christ and to live out the sacrament that our Lord Jesus Christ is calling us to live out. You're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. Know if you are single, we are praying with you. We are praying for you. I have a list of many of you who have sent your names to me who I pray for regularly. I had a question come through from Ola on Instagram, and she said that she recently got into a huge fight with a friend of hers, her closest friend, and it really made her think about the topic of loyalty in friendship, but also in family as well, but especially focusing on friendship. She said, what should be the definition of loyalty in friendship, especially when there's a problem with the other friend who takes everything personal, perhaps holds grudges, or fill in the blank. What's your experience with your friend that makes it difficult to move forward and have that friendship at times? Oh, it's interesting. I come from a huge family, and there can always be moments in the extended family where the relationship can come and go at times. There are periods of desert and periods of great joy and frequent interaction. Now, the difference between friends and family is that family, you're stuck with them. But you also have this underlying attitude that you always love them, and because of that, you choose them because they are your family. That being said, there can also be a necessity, an absolute necessity, for boundaries. If you're being treated poorly, badly, miserably, if gossiping is a huge problem, or any number of violations in terms of any relationship that can occur, you have to have boundaries. Now, friends often do come and go, given state in life, what we do, who our kids are, who our friendships are, who our work environment is bringing into our lives. So how do we live out loyalty in relationships? Well, I think it's important to recognize that if there is an unhealthy situation, an unhealthy behavior and pattern, that unless that person's your spouse, and a minor child, even some of your adult children, that it's okay and important to distance yourself from harmful, unhealthy behavior. There's a great book, it's titled Boundaries, Boundaries by Cloud. I'm going to have to get that name. Patrick, if you want to pull it up for me. It's a great book that can help in navigating friendships, familial relationships, and it's written from a Christian perspective as well. And it helps us to understand that boundaries are good and important. And in fact, they can actually make our relationships better. And sometimes it's important to recognize this. Sometimes we're more of a loyal friend by having a boundary with that friend, by not putting up with unhealthy behaviors, whether it's for your friend yourself or behaviors coming toward you. There's also a problem in our friendships where we've turned to, oh yes, that's the name of it. The book's titled Boundaries, and it's written by Henry Cloud. I knew Cloud was in there. By Henry Cloud and John Townsend. Fantastic book. We'll put a link to that book in the podcast notes for today. relevantradio.com/trending. You can subscribe, listen, and share this podcast. So there's a problem that many of us have, and we talk about it in terms of dating, but not in terms of friendships. Missionary friendships. You need real friendships that aren't extremely difficult and challenging in terms of loyalty behavior and boundaries being violated. If there's a project, if there's someone you're trying to help, that's great. That's important. But it's important that you also have friendships where you're not in the midst of that. And if your friend, as Aristotle emphasizes, we should only ever give constructive criticism. Now, constructive criticism has to do with something that people can actually change. Aristotle, the great philosopher, talks about how in the friendship of virtue, you don't even complain about the other person. Why? Because he said any complaint that is had should be given directly to the friend or family member, and it should be for their well-being. I need to work on this. It should be for their well-being, and it should be something that they can actually be within their sphere of change, within their sphere of control, that they can change and work on. So it shouldn't just be about the bad habit of leaving the lid to the toilet always open, which I cannot stand. There's a lid for a reason, just saying. But it should be something that is having to do with a serious issue that they can change and that is ultimately impacting their well-being. So how can we remain loyal in friendship? Yes, have boundaries for yourself. But also expect the best of your friend. And when you have a complaint, go to them directly and address it. Give them the opportunity to work on it. And if they can't, have the boundary to perhaps allow that season of desert or the season of frequent interaction. But know that there's a beautiful passage in Sirach where it talks about the importance of how when you gain a friend, gain that friend through testing, and don't just trust someone hastily. In other words, don't just give your heart away and not have a sense of protection and responsibility and expectation from the other person. Have a great 4th of July.